Made by BBC Sport for BBC Sounds. This is the Sports Desk.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Desk. I'm Sarah Mulkearns. Could British Gymnastics Day of Reckoning be a turning point for welfare in sport?
I would absolutely describe it as a culture of abuse.
How would you feel if you were 21 years old being given ultimately a baby plate to eat off of?
I heard a click on my foot. I was told to carry on, but I couldn't carry on. I broke my foot in four places.
I wholeheartedly apologise for the experiences that have not met the standards that we should have met for ourselves as a national governing body.
At UK Sport, we do not accept the notion that there has been a priority across the system for medals over other things.
Tough coaching is one thing. This is not tough coaching. This goes way beyond tough coaching.
As a damning report reveals a culture of abuse and fear in British gymnastics, we'll be asking what the sport can do to restore its reputation. And with many other sports reeling from welfare scandals, we'll discuss how far coaches should go to push elite athletes, especially when they are children. We'll hear from the founder of campaign group Gymnasts for Change, a retired Olympian who now coaches young gymnasts, and Paralympic icon Tanny Gray-Thompson. A really important discussion on this week's edition of the Sports Desk podcast. So let me introduce you to our panel this week. We have got BBC Sports News correspondents Natalie Perks and Laura Scott. Hi to you guys.
Hello.
Both in the studio in London. I'm up in Salford, and also alongside you in studio, delighted to say that we are joined by Jennifer McElveen, a former GB Olympic gymnast and co-founder of campaign group Gymnasts for Change. I'll start with you then first, Natalie, because I know you've worked a lot on this over the last couple of years. And for people with, you know, maybe a passing interest or, you know, kind of coming across this story at various intervals, the reckoning in the UK seemed to kind of be triggered by this documentary on Netflix about the issues in the US, didn't it?
Yeah. So we had heard in the past about other people coming forward and talking about abuse, but it was quite isolated and didn't really end up going anywhere once it had been in the press. And then Athlete A came along, which was this documentary on Netflix, and it was all about the former USA gymnastics team doctor, Larry Nassar. And for years, he'd been sexually abusing young women and girls, often horrifically in front of their nonplussed parents, all in the guise of medical treatment. And then the focus of the documentary was not just about the women who bravely came forward, but the cover-up that was subsequently uncovered by the press in the States. And all of the people, they'd been told that the complaints had been made, and basically adults had betrayed them, essentially, at USA Gymnastics, and there was a wider cover-up. And then once that hit Netflix in the UK, there started to be a trickle and then a wave of athletes, not just here, but across the whole globe, really, taking to social media to tell their stories. I think this was pretty much gymnastics' Me Too moment. And although the abuse was here generally of a different nature to what we saw in the States, that's when we as journalists started to investigate all these claims.
I remember watching it and feeling a real understanding that it showed how something of that scale can happen and go kind of unreported and unseen, you know, over a period of years, you know. And it's a lot of times when people say, well, how can it happen in, you know, in plain sight and happen for so long, it gave a really good understanding of it. In terms of this White report then that we had published, it was based on 400 submissions of evidence. Like, there was such a scale of stories and reporting and evidence within it. What did it reveal?
Well, it essentially revealed what gymnasts have been telling us for years, that there'd been systemic abuse and a culture that British gymnastics had allowed to go unchecked. It revealed that the governing body had the financial means to put welfare and safeguarding at the heart of its culture, but for whatever reason, it didn't. Around 40% of the people interviewed by Anne White QC and her team described physically abusive behaviour. There were around 30 submissions out of the 409 with allegations of sexual abuse. More than 25% included reference to excessive weight management, and that's something I've heard time and time again. But more than half reported an element of emotional abuse, and that's been really one of the hardest parts of my job, certainly over the last 2 years.
How did it feel yesterday seeing this all come out, and also those relationships that you have developed with a lot of people that you've been talking to?
I think I felt a lot of pressure to deliver the findings because so many people have waited so long. I think mostly, though, I felt a huge amount of relief for these gymnasts and their parents who've been telling me their stories for the last 2 years. You know, hearing them, I'm not ashamed to say that their stories have deeply affected me. I'm a mother of two young girls, so I don't think you can be human and not feel affected by what you hear if you're hearing these kind of stories over and over again. I've spoken to a lot more, by the way, who didn't get on air in any of my pieces in the last 2 years because they felt, some of them, too scared of their coach still now, too scared to come out and talk about it, or simply just not ready to tell their stories. But I think overall it was a relief that Anne White did say, look, this isn't a case of a few bad apples. This is a problem ingrained in the culture of gymnastics that really needs to change, and that's been unchecked for too long.
And Jennifer, from your point of view, what were your emotions yesterday?
Yeah, it was vindication that it's been confirmed in paper, kind of what we've been saying all along, that there's a big problem. BG, British Gymnastics have failed gymnasts. So yeah, validation of our experience, vindication, and hopefully a bit of hope and a bit of scepticism as to whether this will be the moment for change, real change in gymnastics, and hopefully an example to other sports as well.
And there's this word systemic, isn't it? And I suppose I kind of alluded to it a little bit, is to understanding, you know, from that Netflix documentary, how that happens. You know, can you explain what that is and how it feels to be within that?
Yeah, so Athlete A really clearly showed that it wasn't just Larry Nassar or a particular individual, but what resonated with us in the UK was that normalised culture of just ignoring pain, ignoring welfare concerns of any means, in pursuit of performance and in pursuit of medals. So, and that, you know, just came across in everything that we did and the decisions that were made. And I think it says in the report that athletes felt like commodities rather than human beings. So, yes, it is something that we felt from watching Athlete A, we had to speak out about, even though the scale of sexual abuse is not the same here. It's the same kind of culture that enables the emotional abuse, the neglect and the physical abuse as well.
From the community and the people that you've been talking to, you know, about this over the last couple of years, did they all feel similar to you yesterday?
Yes, I think so. I think I've received a lot of messages of people kind of circling and screenshotting the White Review and kind of saying, finally, this has been confirmed. Like, so, yeah, it's definitely a resounding vindication, but also, like I said, scepticism and hope that this will be a moment for change.
Well, Laura, then let's bring you in if we are going to see change, because there were recommendations in the White Report. So just kind of talk us through what was said there.
Yeah, there were 17 recommendations that Anne White QC came up with, and they range from mandatory safeguarding training for all club owners. Perhaps it will come as a surprise to many that that wasn't already mandatory in the first place. There will be a better independent disclosure service for high performance athletes, because it was found that abuse was more prevalent among elite athletes. There will be a better case management system. I think one of the failings that was identified in the review was that for many years of the review period, British Gymnastics didn't have a grip on the number or nature of complaints. There will also be an independent investigation of all complaints about British Gymnastics employed coaches. I'd love to get Jennifer's thoughts on that. And the creation of a gymnast's handbook. And I think the reason for that is to try to educate gymnasts coming into the sport, and indeed their parents, because remember, this is a sport that is primarily aimed, you know, done by children. The majority of British Gymnastics members are under the age of 12. And I think this handbook is intended to show what behaviour is and isn't acceptable, to help gymnasts and their parents identify issues earlier and feel empowered to come forward and raise complaints if the behaviour isn't correct. A couple of things that weren't in the official recommendations but were mentioned in the review was the potential creation of a sports ombudsman. This is something that has been called upon for many years, perhaps in the most high profile way 5 years ago by Tanny Gray Thompson. We'll come on to an interview I did with her later on in the podcast. But what Anne White said was she wonders how many more sporting scandals it will take before the government of the day appreciates it needs to take more action to protect children who participate in sport. She thinks that an ombudsman is an obvious step in the right direction. The other thing, and again, I'd love to see what Jennifer thinks, is a potential rise in the age limits of gymnastics to 18. That is something that actually Sarah Powell, the new chief executive of British Gymnastics, said she would be raising with FIG, the world governing body, because she thinks that might protect athletes. I'm sure there will be some people who say that doesn't need to happen. But Jennifer, just on that point, what do you think of that suggestion?
Oh, absolutely. That's something that we would definitely support. I think part of the reason gymnasts are so vulnerable is because of their young age at which they start. And so raising that can only support healthier methods and help protect gymnasts. And the handbook that you mentioned as well is a really important idea. And again, something we definitely want to make clear and is what actually is abuse, and driving that awareness so that parents, coaches and gymnasts all understand what healthy training looks like, because so many of the abusive methods have been normalised, and so that, you know, people genuinely might not know the difference.
And just on the age point, men's gymnastics is 18, isn't it, at the Olympics, whereas women and girls is 16. And this review does bring up the huge discrepancy between male and female gymnastics.
It is, and I think it was over almost 80% of gymnasts in 2020 were women, and there's clearly a women's aspect here to be talked about. Historically, women's gymnasts have needed to have this sort of prepubescent look, and look a certain young, skinny, pixie-like way. And it was more important for many coaches to have that aesthetic than to train their gymnasts to have the muscles they need to do the dangerous skills that are required in gymnastics. So there's definitely a women's angle here that's contributed to a lot of the problems, particularly around weight management and eating disorders, for example.
And Jennifer, just on that, because we've seen similar in figure skating recently as well, you know, we've seen adoptions there. And talking to some within both of those industries, some of the skills and stuff that you need can be done better with essentially a younger body for women, but it's different, the skills required and the judgment for men. So is it also an attitude shift within certain sports like this that you accept that, you know, if you're a woman who's gone through puberty and your body looks different, you know, the skills and stuff like that on show are the things that you might be able to do? Because I think sometimes in gymnastics, you know, you mentioned the certain look or style, and some things are easier for a body that hasn't gone through puberty than it is afterwards.
I think that is becoming the case less and less, however, because as the sport progresses, there's so much more, so many more dynamic skills and powerful tumbling moves that far benefit a more mature body type with the muscles, with someone also with a more mature mindset who's able to cope with the complexities. So yes, there are certain kind of idealistic, like potentially you could say like elegant, balletic, say, skills that are in gymnastics, but it's not that they can't be done with a more mature body. So I just think there's this misconception that's come over from sort of Eastern Europe and outdated ideals that gymnasts need to look that certain way, and it's just not true.
I think one thing that was really interesting to read in the White Review, and it was quite clear how much research Anne White had done into a sport that potentially she didn't know a huge amount before. She, you know, she even spoke to the world governing body about this age limits issue to really get a grip of the challenges they might face in raising that. But one thing she mentioned was about the recruitment of coaches from the Soviet Union or countries who were formerly influenced or occupied by the former Soviet Union, and that that had had some cultural consequences on gymnastics, which have lasted through to the review period. And also that a number of coaches haven't had any mandatory refresher training since they first got their qualifications. So a lot of that learning that they had, you know, potentially many decades ago, they have never had to get up to date with changes in societal expectations or changes in safeguarding policies. They just simply haven't had to go through that training. Is that something you've ever noticed, that cultural influence of those Soviet Union coaches who were recruited?
Absolutely. In the very top level of the sport, Russian and Romanian coaches were revered, that we were aspiring to be just like them. I was taken personally to Romania at the age of just 9 years old by myself with the British team. And it was very much the idea that we were trying to copy their success through those methods. And we now know that there are much better, safer ways. There's far more updated sports science that can help us contribute to winning those medals and not have these awful abusive methods and horrible side effects in the process.
Well, let's get the reaction then from British Gymnastics, because they said in a statement that it had accepted all of the recommendations and key findings and would not shy away from doing what is needed. Here is CEO Sarah Powell.
It wasn't good reading. It was very difficult to read. Sport has been so important to me in all of my life, and to see that gymnasts had such poor experiences due to, and I will say it, the failings of our organisation. I was able to speak to some of the gymnasts this morning and to say sorry to them. And I wholeheartedly apologise for the experiences that have not met the standards that we should have met for ourselves as a national governing body. It's very clear our sport needs reform, and I will lead that reform.
Sarah Powell there from British Gymnastics. Jennifer, Sarah Powell took over from Jane Allen, who stepped down in 2020 and was heavily criticised in the White Report. How confident do you feel that Sarah can deliver on her promise to reform?
Everything that I've heard from Sarah Powell so far and speaking to her makes me believe that she does have the very best intentions. But obviously it is a mammoth challenge that we have to tackle, not just a particular issue, but many ingrained historic issues across many aspects of the sport. So I want to be confident, but we kind of will have to see it to believe it, because there's just so much change that needs to still happen.
It felt like a really big moment, Laura, for gymnastics yesterday, but potentially as well, which, you know, we've been alluding to, for welfare concerns in sport, you know, in other sports, and a wider issue, and a moment for people to take stock of, you know, where we kind of are in terms of how we push for success, but how we look after athletes.
Yeah, I mean, this is by no means the first athlete welfare scandal. I think the fear is that unless lessons are learned, not just by gymnastics, but other sports, then it won't be the last. It has put under the spotlight, I guess, the balance that sports put on athlete welfare and performance. And I suppose in the past, there might have been a sense that you could have one and not the other. But actually, the message loud and clear from everyone I've spoken to is you can have both, and you have to have both. You cannot prioritise medal success at the expense of athlete welfare. That just isn't okay. There has been a shift among UK sport in the last couple of years of trying to win the right way. They're very keen to drop any association with the notion of medals at all costs. But it did come up in the White Review yesterday, this notion of cash for medals, and that I think one of the most telling conclusions from Anne White was she said, not only did British Gymnastics not prevent or limit abusive behaviours, but they condoned some of them in the pursuit of national and international competitive success. I think that was one of the most stark findings from Anne White. And I think the hope is that this will be a watershed moment, but we have heard that before. I think potentially the scale of this and the fact that it was an independent review commissioned by UK Sport and Sport England sets this apart from other athlete welfare scandals, which have been largely managed by the sports governing bodies themselves. And potentially this is, you know, the turning point. I think a lot of people will clearly hope that it is, and that we don't see another issue like this in another sport. But I have to say, from things I'm hearing in other sports, I'm not that confident, because I hear of major issues in other sports. We know there are Olympic-funded sports where there are coaches under investigation, and I suppose it would perhaps be naive to think that this will be the last.
Nat, I know you spoke to Sport England and UK Sport after the report was released. They commissioned it. So did they acknowledge that, you know, as Laura's saying there, you know, is this a legacy, you know, for how we have been with sport over the last 20, 30, 40 years? And is there kind of the acknowledgement that reform is needed across the board?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, like Laura said, you know, this is the very latest in a long line of scandals. We've seen it in canoeing and bobsleigh and para swimming and cycling and football. And I think we need to understand something. Like, prior to 2008, British gymnasts had only ever won 3 medals at Olympic Games, one individual. And then this report actually goes back to August 2008. So it's important to put it in context. They were looking at these Olympic cycles. And since then, 4 games, 14 medals. UK Sport has all, since 2008, has given them £38 million of taxpayer and exchequer money. So, of course, it's going to be levelled at them that it's a cash for medals situation. Now, I spoke to both UK Sport and Sport England yesterday. We're going to hear from Tim Hollingsworth from Sport England. But first of all, let's have a little listen to what Sally Munday from UK Sport had to say.
At UK Sport, we do not accept the notion that there has been a priority across the system for medals over other things. I spent 10 years of my career before I did this job in 2019 as chief executive of a national governing body as an Olympic sport, and I never once during that time felt pressure to win medals at any cost.
I think this is an enormous moment for the sport, but also for all of us involved in creating opportunities for people to feel the wonder and the joy of being active and playing sport at any level. And when that is compromised or where that is challenged, then we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make it safe, welcoming and inclusive. And there's more work that can be done, but today is a really important moment for acknowledging that.
So Sally Munday doubling down there on a refusal to accept this idea that money for medals causes issues. But that's literally what UK Sport do. They hand sports money every Olympic cycle based on whether they have the talent to reach a podium. So it's a very difficult one for them. Sport England, though, seem more willing to see this as a line in the sand moment for welfare in sport.
We have been seeing some reaction from the wider sporting world as well. The British Athletes Commission said the recommendations should be given due consideration by the entire sporting system in order for participants and observers to have full confidence in the safety and integrity of sport at all levels. And we also saw former Team GB cyclist and Olympic gold medalist Callum Skinner tweeting that UK sport wouldn't know good culture if it smacked them across the face. So I think it's fair to say we know where he stands. But Jennifer, I was quite interested seeing you nodding your head when Laura was talking about, you know, issues in other sports and hearing stories, because I sense that you agree and you've heard a lot of those other issues and you think it's wider than gymnastics.
Of course it's wider than gymnastics. We've seen reviews into swimming, reviews into cycling, and mentions of so many other sports, and even dance and ballet, and any case where there's this pressure to win, and especially young athletes, the cultural, you know, themes here are exactly the same. It's very frustrating to hear Sally Munday deny that this kind of pursuit of medals has not been a contributing factor when it clearly has. And someone that maybe doesn't really grasp yet still the fact that this really is a widespread cultural issue across sport, not just particular cases.
I think what's interesting with gymnastics, though, in this case, is that in the past we've seen it in other sports at elite level. We're talking about athletes that are reaching the very top of their sport. In gymnastics, it goes right the way down to grassroots level. And so many of the gymnasts I've spoken to have not been people that have made the Olympics, like Jen. They've been 10-year-olds who quit the sport because they couldn't go through it anymore and their parents wouldn't let them go through it anymore. And so that's where it's really, really interesting, gymnastics, because you're not just getting those elite funded athletes. We are talking about, as Nicole Pavia, our original whistleblower, said to us yesterday, child abuse at the very basic level across all levels of this sport.
And it's been really interesting that even, you know, just seeing the community of people who have come out and support, and, you know, even if they don't want to talk themselves about their own coaches or stuff that they've gone through, the support that they lend to others, which, you know, suggests and hints to that wider experience, doesn't it? And I know you've also been speaking, we mentioned the Netflix documentary, because you have been speaking to one of those who was involved within that community in the USA.
Yep. So Rachel Den Hollander is seen as a bit of a rock star in the gymnastics community. Is that fair, Jen?
Absolutely.
She was the first to go public with what happened to her with Larry Nassar. So she isn't the athlete A that's referred to in the documentary, but she was certainly the first to come out in the press in the States and say, this happened to me, and put her face to that abuse. And by doing so, that started this global conversation. And I'd put it to her actually in an interview before that what started as a trickle, she started essentially a tidal wave coming back to her, and huge pressure on her shoulders. But she is absolutely amazing. And last night I got a chance to chat to her again, and I asked her for her reaction to the White Review.
I think what we see in this report is what the athletes have been telling us for decades. The system is so corrupt and so abusive and has done just incredible damage to these women and the men who are in the report. And so you see coming out of here the same threads that they've been saying, but put together in a way that really elevates their voices and validates what they have been telling everyone has been happening all along. And it puts it in a form that I think British gymnastics is going to have to grapple with in a way that they haven't had to before.
Jennifer, hearing that and having gone through everything in the last couple of years, do you feel like you're all in a better place?
We're definitely in a better place than, a few years ago. We're still not in the place we need to be. But yes, it is encouraging to see the wheels finally turning towards the culture we need.
Well, don't forget you can subscribe to The Sports Desk to receive a new episode every week. Just head to BBC Sounds or your favourite podcast provider. You can also check out our back catalogue of shows, including last week's lively debate on cryptocurrency products in football. We spoke to Michael Owen's US business partner, who defended the former England striker's controversial claim that his collection of NFTs wouldn't lose their value.
I believe that in the excitement of the moment, that's where that tweet and Michael Owen's comments came from. You know, we were very excited about the situation. He had come to us because we're doing something different and he wanted to do something different. This is not your typical NFT project. We're not catering to the NFT crowd. We are catering to real deal collectors.
This is The Sports Desk.
Okay, we're going to hear from another former GB gymnast who is now a coach shortly, because we want to delve a little bit deeper into what this White Report will mean going forward for sport and coaching as a whole. And Laura, you have been speaking to one of the most influential figures in British sport.
Yes, Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson. It was back in 2017 that she did her Duty of Care in Sport review, and that came up with a number of recommendations about how sport could be reformed to better protect everyone. And I think something that we've heard yesterday and from people reacting to the White Review is this sense of duty of care, and that perhaps that was the main thing that British gymnastics failed on, its duty of care to its participants, which we've said mainly include children. So Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson came to see us yesterday. She had a chance to look at the review. She did get quite emotional, actually, talking about its findings, specifically the fact that 9% of the submissions had related to sexual abuse. But this is what she had to say.
This does feel like a moment in time, because I think when you listen to the interviews of the young women that are involved, it's not just really powerful, but it's the number of voices that are saying this. And to understand how difficult it would have been for anyone to come forward, the culture of fear that exists within sport, there's a huge amount of bravery coming forward and challenging the system. Because even really young athletes know, and families know, that you can't challenge. If you have this aspiration to compete at the highest level, you can't say anything. And I think it just needs to be more open than that. You know, elite sport is not balanced, and we have to accept that as well. But it's how you put balance around athletes on the pathway at elite level, how you put balance back into them. You know, when I did my piece of work, the number of athletes that said to me, across a huge range of sports, was they felt like a commodity. They were introduced by the colour of their medal, not their name. And they didn't feel that they were treated like people. And, you know, the medal table is important to us as a nation. But I still think we can win medals, but apply duty of care to everyone in the system, the athletes, coaches, everybody. And we have to do something different. So I am optimistic about the future, because if not now, then when? And actually, it will have an impact of people thinking whether sport, elite sport, is for them if sport doesn't take responsibility for its actions.
Sally Monday strongly rejected the notion of cash for medals, that medals have been put above athlete welfare. From what you experienced in elite sport and from the work you've done scrutinising elite sport, do you think she's right that there's never been a cash for medals concept?
Governing bodies know that to get funding, they have to win medals. So, you know, that's been part of the process since lottery funding was set up. It was set up because of how the Olympic team performed in Atlanta, won gold medal. And, you know, it was about how we can change the system to be more successful. You know, there were high aspirations on, you know, sports going into 2012, 2016 and Tokyo. So while it might not be absolutely directly linked, jobs, performance, athletes know that, you know, that they have to be winning medals to get funding. There has been talk in the last couple of years about trying to move away from that. But the reality is, you know, governing bodies that don't perform don't get the funding.
What did you think when you read about the anecdotes that came up in this, you know, about people being made to stand on a bar for 2 hours because they were scared to perform a trick, or coaches pushing people's legs down into the splits, or even being told, you know, not to eat grapes because they're the highest fat fruit and therefore they were going to such lengths to hide food from their coaches, they put them in the ceiling tiles. What did that make you think reading that?
It's horrendous. And, you know, in a lot of sports, in my sport, weight, you know, power to weight ratio was an important part of the sport, in terms of how you have the racing chair built and how you perform. But it's how you have those conversations with, actually in this case, really young women and some young men. And it's about guiding them through and helping them make informed decisions about what they do. And, you know, I've heard so many times over the years, well, this is how we have to train, or, you know, this is how I have to accept being coached because it will make me good. And I just don't buy that anymore. You know, it's, and it comes back to, you know, the drive for medals. It is a bit of a sausage factory in terms of how athletes are found and, you know, progress through talent ID and make it to elite. And there is no place in sport for the things that we're reading in the White Review. Yeah, tough coaching is one thing, but this is not tough coaching. This goes way beyond tough coaching.
Just to touch on where this leaves coaching, because this is obviously about gymnastics, but I think everyone is saying other sports need to learn from this. I suppose there might be a feeling that this will lead to softer coaching and potentially that will have an impact on medals. But do you think actually we can see a system where people are treated the right way and have every bit of the success that they've had in the past?
So whenever I've talked about duty of care, I talk about duty of care to everyone in the system. And that does apply to coaches, performance directors, physio, you know, everyone. And that is about the right training, about the correct, you know, having KPIs. It's about managing behaviour of coaches and stepping in when you see behaviours that are not acceptable. And in this sport and other sports, we've seen coaches who nobody holds them in check. But part of the problem is a performance director or a coach, they're meant to be the magic fairy dust. They're meant to be the one who spots talent and sees something in a young person and guides them through. And sometimes it's quite hard to tell those people that they need to change their behaviour. So I think, you know, we need to be looking at managing and supporting coaches. What you don't want is people not to want to come into coaching, or, you know, decide that it's not the career for them, because it can be a great career. But it's about everyone understanding what the boundaries are.
Fascinating listen there from Dame Tanny Gray-Thompson, one of Britain's greatest Paralympic athletes, knows all about winning medals, but does advocate quite well over welfare issues over the last couple of years. So let's talk then about boundaries, tough coaching, what it is, because we can also bring into the Sports Desk podcast now Hannah Whelan, a former GB Olympic gymnast who now coaches at Warrington Gymnastics Club. Welcome along to the podcast, Hannah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Firstly, I suppose from your perspective, how do you think coaching has changed from when you were, you know, competing as a young child to how you coach now? Or has it changed?
I guess I certainly coach very differently to the way that I was coached, and others from my generation were coached. I've learnt a lot of what not to do, I suppose. But I've also made sure that I've gone out and sought CPD, which I know is a big issue that's come out of the White Review, that it's basically non-existent.
Sorry, what's CPD?
Continuing personal development. So kind of going out and continuing with their courses and keeping up to date with the latest science and research is kind of, there's been a bit of a culture of once you've got your qualification, you don't do any more research or you don't have any more lectures or knowledge on the latest up-to-date information within the sport, within sports science, which is so important in sport now. So I think that's changed massively and we have much more of an input of sports science, but the coaches who passed their qualifications decades ago have not, kind of sought out that new information and continued with the information that they had 20, 30 years ago. So I guess that for me is one of the biggest differences, I suppose, in coaching at the moment. And it's a shame that the coaches who are at the top of the sport, our national coaches, haven't felt the need to stay on top of that important information.
Do you feel like you're the exception rather than the rule now, Hannah?
No, I would like to hope there's a lot more coaches that think the way that I do. I mean, I have to say, if I'd have stayed coaching in the environment that I was in when I was a gymnast, surrounded by the wrong mentors and surrounded by certain people, I dread to think the kind of coach I would be now. So, you know, as stated in the White Review, the senior coaches' behaviour and techniques have been passed down to the junior coaches. So it's been this vicious cycle, unfortunately, that these junior coaches coming through, they don't know any better. And they're also being told that these are the right things to do. And they're in an environment and culture that is allowing these behaviours and also kind of praising them because it's getting results. Mm. So being able to having stepped away from that, gone and done my own thing with my sister at Warrington, and we've sought out kind of information from other coaches and taken on board people that we respect and their information, and we've managed to build a system and a culture within our little club in Warrington that we're very proud of. And I'd like to think there's other clubs up and down the country that are the same.
How do you define the line between, you know, tough and soft coaching? You know, because people will be different personalities and some people will need an arm around the shoulder, others will need to be pushed. So how do you go about assessing that and making sure you're on the right side of that line?
Again, I think a lot of it comes down to me personally, your own morals in a way. You know, for me, there is quite a clear line now, being, you know, 30 years old in a way, maybe when I was a little bit younger, as a younger junior coach, maybe not so much. But now as an adult, I can very much see that line. And there is a big difference between disciplining a child and, you know, maybe stepping into that parent role when they're in the gym and behavior wise. But then there is a very, very clear line that steps over for me into the abuse, where you are, you know, you're at the detriment of the gymnast's welfare and safety. To me, it is hard being a coach. I will say that for the coaches out there. You know, we are expected to be many different people, the technician of the actual gymnastic skills, the guidance counsellor at times, if they're going through stuff at home, we're expected to be a psychologist, a strength and conditioning coach. And then some coaches have felt the need to be a nutritionist as well. It's impossible for us to do it all correctly. And that's why there needs to be people brought on. And again, this is what I'm talking about with everyone moving forward with the sports science. If you are a club that is coaching gymnasts of a certain level, then it is your responsibility to bring on board strength and conditioning coaches, nutritionists, psychologists to support your gymnasts, because it is not down to us to do it all. And it shouldn't be, because we can't possibly have all that knowledge to do it correctly and safely, in my opinion. But there is a line, and I think a lot of coaches at the moment are a little bit scared of knowing what to do. But at the end of the day, we have to move with the generation. We have to move with the times. Gymnastics is not the same as it was 20 years ago, and it's not going to be the same in 20 years.
And I think this is one of the things the White Review actually said, is that some of these coaches genuinely believed this was the way they had to act to make their gymnasts better. And it goes back to what Hannah's been saying, that these are learnt behaviours. This is how they were coached. And there was a decision made by Hannah, clearly, where you, Hannah, said that I'm never going to be that person. I'm never going to coach the way I was coached. Some have not made that decision. And Hannah, you've also gone out and spent your own money to go and make yourself a better coach. And if British Gymnastics had ever put that in place where they had to say to their coaches, right, you have to now do this and you have to do this and you have to do this to be able to keep being at the elite end of your sport. That was the sort of key thing. They had the money and they could have spent it and they chose not to. And one of the other things I've heard so much over the last 2 years is people saying, oh, come on, though, they need to man up. You've got to be tough, right? You've got to be tough to be an Olympic gymnast or an Olympic athlete. And there's that kind of old adage that sticks, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, I've got news. Words really do hurt. And some of the words that have been used that I've heard over the last 2 years have been horrific. So I think we need to sort of forget about this idea that unless it's a physical break of a bone or something, then it's not going to hurt. The amount of emotional damage that I've heard in the last 2 years because of words and screaming and weight management techniques that have led to eating disorders for the rest of these young women's lives, we need to just move away from that and very, very quickly.
Yeah. Just to very quickly add, unfortunately, I feel that a lot of coaches aren't equipped with the knowledge to do this because the coaching courses that I have been on even recently in the last few years, they're all about the technical side. There is no support for coaches on working with children, and anybody who works with children knows it's much more complex than it's made out to be. And obviously when you're working with high level athletes and throw that into that prepubescent years and teenage years, they need a lot more support, and the coaches need a lot more knowledge to be able to do that as well.
Hannah, I wondered about the weight management. What is the current training that you get in terms of that side of coaching, how you even approach those conversations, or if actually they're never appropriate to have?
Well, I have to say, having recently been on a coaching course, I wasn't particularly impressed with the information that was given around weight, around weighing the gymnasts, around nutrition. And it is something that I am currently trying to be a part of in order to change the information that is given to coaches. It is very minimal. Some of it is very, very old fashioned. We're talking decades and decades ago, and that has still not been updated to this day. Me personally, from my personal experiences, I in the gym, it's not our remit. It's not something that I would ever broach. We have a designated welfare officer if there's any issues of a gymnast that I'm concerned about, but it's never something that I would ever do. And maybe I'm very far the other way because of my own experiences, but I think that puts me in a position that to understand actually the severity and importance of dealing with these matters very sensitively. And it's something that BG, I think, are currently they are working on, and I have seen some documents produced in the last 12 months, but it's something that's going to take a lot more time and a lot more research to change it across the board.
Before we get a final thought, just Hannah and Jennifer, I'm interested in this concept that if we have, you know, more kind of welfare focused coaching, we will lose out on medals. Can you have both, or do we sacrifice medals?
Yeah, I feel quite strongly about this, that that medals can be won in the right way, and that the problems really come when the pressure to win is there without the right education. I mean, would you rather pick a team, you know, to go up for the Olympic medal that has irreversible physical injuries, PTSD, anxiety, the battling eating disorders and trauma? Or would you rather put up a healthy, self-confident team with the muscles and sports science and nutritional support they need to succeed? I mean, it just seems very obvious to me that a focus on welfare will only support results, and having that science be followed can only help with things.
Yeah, so I do agree with Jenny. Being a coach myself, obviously I understand the difficulties of working with children and the pressures that they face as well, and I think it's about giving the gymnast their autonomy and giving the ownership back to the gymnast. And it's at the end of the day, I am here to support their journey in gymnastics, whether that be international level, regional level, county level, whatever that may be. And if the gymnast has all the right attributes, the support of the parents, the support of the coach, then they will get to where they are supposed to be, or will get to their, they will reach their potential if they are coached in the right way. There does not need to be this, you know, very, very strict kind of, Eastern side of doing things in order to get a gymnast to the highest level. They if the gymnast has the talent there and the potential and they have the correct people around them and the support system, then they will make it. And they will be successful and happy doing it as well.
So do you measure success differently then, Hannah?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I know there are a lot of, dare I say, egotistical coaches out there who are either reliving their own dreams through their gymnasts or just want it so badly that they lose sight of actually what the gymnast wants. And for me, obviously, I know I can say that I've achieved it myself. So for me, coaching is just about the kids. It's about where they want to get to. And reaching their potential, whatever that may be, or reaching their goals, whatever they may be.
I just wanted to get both of your thoughts. Something that came up yesterday when we got first sight of this review is, and we'd had a hint of it, I suppose, was that no individual coaches or athletes were named in the review. Now, we've seen Jane Allen. She resigned or retired in December 2020. We've seen other coaches allowed to step aside. Do you feel that there has been enough accountability for the failings at British Gymnastics that have been highlighted in stark detail in this review?
I personally don't think there has been yet. I think there's still a long road ahead of us to understand the depth of this and also the real repercussions for the coaches and the people at the top who could have done something and didn't, or were the ones actually, you know, giving out the abuse. And I think that hopefully moving forward, you know, with the recommendations of a coach register or something like that, these sorts of things can be avoided so that parents can see in black and white what coaches should and shouldn't be coaching or are coaching and what clubs, you know, that they feel like their gymnasts are going to be safe at.
There's definitely not been enough accountability yet. I know there's a lot of ongoing investigations, so we will try to, you know, continue pushing for accountability in those cases. We at Gymnast for Change think it's really important to have both redress and reform in order to move the sport forward. You need to fully address the past for both individuals and for the culture. Otherwise, you'll never really be able to change it and get to a place that is different.
And then finally, on that note, Natalie, you know, you've been covering this for the last couple of years. Do you think this is the line in the sand? Do we all move forward, or is there going to be further repercussions down the line?
Well, the White Review made it really, really clear that British Gymnastics have to now report back 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. They've got essentially 2 years to turn this around. That's not a lot of time to actually change a culture that has been ingrained in this sport since the sort of late 70s, you know, mid 80s, when, like Jen said, coaches started being sent to the former USSR and Romania to learn techniques. So there's a, you know, very short time they've got to get on that. But there is that sort of threat hanging over their head where UK sport could, and they haven't said this yet, but they could start to cut funding. They could start to make it a condition of their funding if they don't get their house in order. I do believe that Sarah Powell is in the right place, has her heart in the right place to take this in the right direction. There probably needs to be some work done on people that have been there a very long time and were complicit because they knew of everything that was going on. I do believe that she is best placed to get to grips with that. And I think ultimately, the media, we've done a lot of work in the last 2 years, not just at the BBC, of course, but at other outlets, of keeping the pressure on this story, and we're not about to let it go. So if British Gymnastics think that they've got 2 years without any media scrutiny, they are very much wrong.
Natalie Perks, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast, along with Laura Scott, our BBC Sports News correspondent. And also thank you to Hannah Whelan, former GB Olympic gymnast, who is now a coach, and also to Jennifer McElveen, former GB Olympic gymnast and co-founder of campaign group Gymnasts for Change. Lovely to have you all on the podcast this week. Remember, if you have enjoyed this episode, we have a full back catalogue. Just head over to BBC Sounds or your usual provider. Just search out the Sports Desk. You can find us there, and also get in touch with your thoughts on social media, hashtag BBC Sports Desk. But that's it for this week. See you again next week. Bye bye.
The Sports Desk, a BBC Sport production for the BBC Sounds.
And remember, if you've been affected by any of the issues that we have raised in this podcast, just search out BBC Action Line. There is lots of help and resources available to you there. So it is BBC Action Line.